According to a secret token agreed upon between me and them at my last departure from them, which was that in any ways they should not fail to write or carve on the trees or posts of the doors the name of the place where they should be seated. Welcome to the Oddity Archive with Evan and David.
Welcome back.
Oh, hey.
This is season 2, episode 6, if my maths are correct. So, David.
I think this is episode 5.
Oh, boy. Sorry. I'm getting really excited about this season. So, episode 5. but we may carry this story into episode 6, so it still kind of works.
Yeah, looking like a two-parter here.
So, a bit of old English there for the open. Do you want to maybe give us like a slight translation, or is that worth it at this point? Because I heard it and kind of still didn't really know what it was saying. And yeah, that could be on me. Maybe everybody else was like, what an idiot.
So the translation is, without giving too much away, although if you know the story of the lost colony of Roanoke, then you know exactly what that whole thing's referring to. But basically it's saying that before John White, who you'll learn about probably starting in part 2, before he left the colony, he told them, leave a special token should you have to leave this place.
Okay.
By carving the name of where you're going into a tree or a doorpost or somewhere so that I'll know where you went.
Got it. I feel like old English always has a way of making me think it's saying the opposite thing. And then the translation's like, nah, you're just don't know what you're talking about.
Nah, he was just saying he wants chili on his hot dogs.
Oh, yeah. Okay, now I get it.
Great. That makes a little more sense. Clears things up for me. Do you have anything you want to cover before we dive into the lost colony of Roanoke?
I think this was a listener suggestion or request. Didn't you have somebody you knew?
Yeah, my friend Madison and her husband Dave, I think, were saying this would be a good one to jump into.
Well, Madison and Dave, if you're still listening, I got a bone to pick with you.
Uh-oh.
This was a research-heavy episode. I started getting into this because I had like the basic idea of what the Lost Colony of Roanoke was. Mm-hmm. I was telling Evan, usually for an episode, I'll have like 6 pages of notes. This one, I have 13. So going into this, sort of to set expectations.
Right.
I think what my plan is, we're going to cover everything up until the Lost Colony gets established tonight.
Okay.
And then part 2, we'll start off with the individuals that were part of the Lost Colony landing in the new world and establishing their community.
Got it.
Because if I covered like just the Lost Colony, this would be like a 10-minute episode, and 5 minutes of it would be me and you doing like bad Southern accents.
I mean, who doesn't want that?
Because the story of the Lost Colony is very simple.
Right.
This group of colonists, they came to the new world. Someone left for a resupply ship. When they came back, the colonists were gone.
So, I mean, I remember this being part of school curriculum. Like, I heard about this in 7th, 8th grade, but I can't remember it too well other than kind of the very vague colony established and disappeared.
Yeah, I think colonists and all that stuff was covered heavily where we went to school. Like, yeah, we went on field trips to Jamestown and stuff.
To a fault, I would say. Yeah, they're like, guess where we're going? We're like, oh my God, please, we've seen
Did you know that Virginia was one of the first?
So like I said, the story of the Lost Colony, it's a very simple story. But in order to understand why things went the way they did, we have to give a whole lot of backstory.
Okay.
There's a whole lot of information that we need so that we can form an informed opinion right, on what happened with the Lost Colony. And so, like I said, it's going to be a lot of history today. Mm-hmm. And we're going to finish with the Lost Colony just starting.
Okay.
So I'm just giving everybody a heads up on that. I'm going to try and keep it brief and concise, but there's a lot of people, there's a lot of dates, there's a lot of boats. You know how good we are with our boat knowledge.
If it's as good as our geography, we're looking good. And just to clarify, so you're saying this episode, which is, we're thinking 2 parts.
Yeah.
We'll end with the colony being established so that we can pick up from there for the next half, the next episode.
More or less.
Okay. Got it.
I kind of picked the lost colony. I picked this one to cover in November because my brain goes, November, that's Thanksgiving. That's like colonists and stuff. Let's do a colonist story. And I was like, let's go with a bunch of them just disappearing, I guess. I don't know. But, sure. But you know, my brain, we did creepy stuff in October. I'm going with colonial stuff in November for Thanksgiving.
I think colonialism around Thanksgiving time makes sense for better or worse.
Yeah. This is the oldest story that we have covered so far. I think the oldest one yet would be the Jersey Devil, probably.
Okay.
And this predates that by over 100 years.
I was going to guess the Outlaw pass, but...
The Jersey Devil origin story was like before the Revolutionary War.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The Outlaw pass was in like the 50s.
Okay. Well, you know. History is not my major or strong suit.
This story, a little geography, takes place in the Outer Banks. And this is somewhere that I've been vacationing to like my entire life. So I've been all up and down the Outer Banks. I've been to Roanoke Island. It's called Manio now, but where the colony was established, I've been to these places. I've been to Hatteras Island, which you'll come to learn is Croatoan Island.
Okay.
So it was pretty interesting for me to get into this story because a lot of the names in this story are names of places, mm-hmm. landmarks, stuff like that, that are still in the Outer Banks today. And so I was like researching the story. I was like, oh, that's where that name comes from. That's where that name comes from.
Gotcha.
So it's kind of cool to get into it.
If you're from the East Coast, in particular Virginia, North Carolina, that area, like this is a very popular place to go to for vacation. It's beach week kind of land. I think if you kind of live around where we do, it's a very common area to know or have been to.
Yeah.
But a lot of us have been there who live in this area. So we're very familiar with it.
It's a good point. I should probably like explain what the Outer Banks is to everybody else.
Sorry, I may have jumped the gun on you just doing that, but...
No, but you reminded me too, which is good. So the Outer Banks, for anybody that doesn't know, it's a line of barrier islands off the coast of North Carolina. So if you look on a map and you look at North Carolina, you have the main state, and then there's just sort of a line off the coast of it, and that's the Outer Banks. They're sort of constantly shifting. You may have seen news of like houses falling into the ocean in the Outer Banks because the sand shifts around parts of them. Aren't static islands. It's an ever-changing area.
Yeah.
And so you have, I'm going to say it's probably 50 miles all the way down the coast of North Carolina.
Yeah.
And then you have the Sound, which is the area between the barrier islands and the mainland, which will become important in the story. But that's what the Outer Banks is. It's a series of islands.
Is a barrier island just, it's barrier for the state? Is that a term or is that specific to the area? It's called the barrier islands. Does that question make sense?
I think that's a general geography term.
Okay.
I think. Hopefully it is.
If not, we'll make it one.
We'll make it one. Yeah.
Cool. Got it.
Last note, and then I'll get into the history lesson. Just yet another disclaimer that there are a lot of Native American names in this episode. I'm going to get every single one of them horribly wrong. So just apologies to everyone involved with this episode. Apologies to you for having to hear me try to pronounce these words.
Once we get some sponsorship, we'll hire
some translators.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I talked about in one of the episodes, the only way I ever pass a foreign language is just cheating. And so I'm going to try my best. I'm going to give an honest try on pronouncing these words, but I'm going to get them wrong.
And if anybody ever wants to chime in and let us know proper pronunciation after the fact, we will happily correct ourselves
yes,
after the fact.
But absolutely.
Doing the best we can with the time we got to research and all that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The first note in this whole episode is in 1524. So we're going way back. 1524. This is when Europeans first explored the Outer Banks. So this is when the European nations started sending ships over, trying to figure out what was going on the other side of the Atlantic Ocean. And the Outer Banks were first discovered and explored in 1524 by a man named Giovanni da Verrazzano.
Nice.
Verrazzano. We're not even two Native American words and I'm already getting them wrong. Giovanni de Verrazzano. That's what I'm going to say. He mistook the Pamlico Sound. Again, the sound is the area between the barrier islands and the mainland, and it's named the Pamlico Sound. He mistook the sound for the Pacific Ocean. So he landed on the Outer Banks, and at certain points, the sound is very wide, so you could not see the mainland. Mm-hmm. They landed on the Outer Banks, and parts of it are very narrow, and probably just walked to the other side and was like, this is the Pacific Ocean. They had no frame of reference. There was no, like, you couldn't get on Google Maps and be like, oh, actually. So, and that's what a lot of this initial exploring was trying to find a shortcut to China, basically, for trading.
Yeah.
And so he mistook it for the Pacific Ocean, but he basically went back to England, presented all of this stuff to the king, and the king was like, yeah, not interested. And so everything just sort of died off for a while. Mm-hmm. And the kings never pursued this idea of China's just on the other side of the Outer Banks until 1578. So over 50 years later, 1578, Queen Elizabeth I, she has all of this information that somebody explored this area called the Outer Banks, and they thought the Pacific Ocean was on the other side of it. And she decides, okay, this is worth exploring. I'm going to send somebody over there to try and figure this out. Mm-hmm. So she sends a man named Sir Humphrey Gilbert to explore and colonize territories, quote, unclaimed by Christian kingdoms, unquote.
Great.
Right?
So, let the colonialism begin.
Yeah, basically. So Sir Humphrey Gilbert is basically given free rein on go explore, see what's going on over there. And he interpreted this as giving him the rights to all the land in the New World, quote unquote, north of Spanish Florida, because the Spanish had already colonized Florida.
Right.
And so England was trying to go over and colonize everything north of Florida before the Spanish could move their way up the coast.
Right.
So Humphrey Gilbert, he's given the rights to basically go and explore all of this stuff. And in 1583, he claims St. John's, Newfoundland. So kind of north, up in Canada.
Oh, way north.
Yeah, way north. Yeah. And so this becomes the first English territory in North America.
Okay.
So he's going way up north. But again, there's no maps. They don't know where the quote unquote cut through to China is going to be.
Did they just happen to land there? Or was that kind of more or less the intent, just shoot a little bit more north and then they...
Yeah, I think it was, this is a good middle ground, because again, they don't know where they're at. Yeah. So they went far enough north from Spanish Florida and they were like, yeah, this is probably a good place to drop anchor and
take over.
And take over.
Yeah, right.
So that's 1583. Unfortunately, after he took St. John's, Newfoundland, on his return voyage back to England, he passes away.
Was he old or just...
I'm not sure.
Back then, I feel like you kind of could go down for almost...
Yeah, right. Anything. Like you don't eat enough oranges and you just die of scurvy.
Right.
I'm not sure exactly how he died, but I know that he did. Okay. He died on the way back. And so following his death, the queen is trying to figure out, well, what in the world am I supposed to do now? And so she decides to split the charter. The charter is basically the land grant of whatever you find in this area, you can keep. The charter is colonization, just in a legal sense, I guess.
Yeah. Once you take that land from them, here's the part you get. Here's the part I get.
Yeah. Once you conquer the indigenous people there, this charter decrees that you can keep that land.
Nice. Not really, just for...
Yeah.
Clarification. I do not support that. Okay. Nice.
Evan's currently working on colonizing his neighbor's house.
Yeah, my boat's a little small and it's on wheels, but you know.
No, I have a charter to your bathroom.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to be over here a lot.
So Queen Elizabeth, she decides, okay, I don't want to give all the land rights to one person. I'm going to split it up. So she splits the charter between Adrian Gilbert, who is Humphrey Gilbert's brother.
Okay.
So she splits it up between Adrian Gilbert and his half brother, Sir Walter Raleigh.
Ah, I know that one.
Probably have heard of Sir Walter Raleigh before. He's big in the history books. I feel like he was celebrated quite a bit in the history books. I have come to dislike Sir Walter Raleigh quite a bit in researching this episode.
I feel like there's a trend there with people, we were like, aren't they great? Here's this holiday. And then we're like, oh.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. Yeah.
Sir Walter anyway. Raleigh was, well, we'll get into it, y'all. We'll see.
Okay.
So Adrian's charter gave him all points north of Newfoundland. So because they established a colony in St. John's, Newfoundland, that sort of became like the defining point. And so Adrian got all points north,
okay,
which, again, they didn't know that he was getting the short end of the stick there.
Yeah, I was like, is there much, how much more north? And you get Antarctica.
Yeah. The thinking was because they had gone up the East Coast,
yeah,
and they saw all the land, they were thinking at some point north of Newfoundland, they were going to be able to cut across to China.
Okay.
And so they sort of already knew that all points south of Newfoundland, it was going to be like you were going to have to at least hit land at some point.
Okay. So they may have been trying to give Sir Walter Raleigh the short end of the stick.
Yeah, I think that's what they were trying to do. They were trying to give Walter Raleigh the short end of the stick,
yeah,
but they ended up giving the other guy it. Because okay, where they gave the land to Sir Walter Raleigh, they knew the boats were going to hit land.
Got it.
But they didn't know north of Newfoundland. And so Adrian was still hopeful that he was going to find some route,
yeah,
west to China, which obviously doesn't work out that way.
In theory, could have made him, yeah, mad wealthy.
Right.
Yeah.
And so Sir Walter Raleigh, his charter was issued March 25th, 1584, and it required that he had to establish a colony by 1591.
Okay.
So he had 7 years. You have to establish a colony or you lose your charter.
What does that mean to establish a colony?
Like he needs to have a group of people living over there, basically.
Okay. I don't know if there's like bullet points where like, and you need to have a working well or whatever.
You need to have at least two McDonald's.
A Starbucks with a drive-thru. Right.
So he had to establish a colony by 1591 or else he would lose his charter.
Okay.
That point will become very important in part two of this story.
Right.
So his charter said that he was to, quote, discover, search, find out, and view such remote, heathen, and barbarous lands, countries, and territories to have, hold, occupy, and enjoy.
Oh.
End quote.
Well, as long as he can enjoy it.
Right. That was like the wording of the charter that he was given. So basically, they gave Adrian, Humphrey's brother,
yeah,
the points north to try and find a way west to China. Mm-hmm. They gave Raleigh points south, essentially to establish a colony and establish an outpost to hold back the Spanish from expanding north.
Oh, okay.
So Raleigh's whole mission basically was, you need to establish English control in this area so the Spanish don't get all of it.
Right. Which sounds like he's basically there to be the buffer.
Yes.
And fight while Adrian's up there just like, oh, we're going to have all the money. Make sure it's safe down there. There. There.
We're going to get west. Yeah.
Okay.
One tricky piece about this is that Queen Elizabeth I really liked Sir Walter Raleigh.
Okay.
So he was not allowed to leave her side.
Mm.
He was not allowed to travel to the colonies himself.
Oh, okay.
He had to just send people over there, but he had to stay by Queen Elizabeth's side kind of at all points in time.
So his correspondence was just, I sent whoever and they send messages back by boat or
yeah,
something presumably.
Yeah. Back okay. then it would be all right. Y'all are going here and there and doing this. And then like a year later, somebody would show back up and be like, yeah, it didn't go so well.
Sorry.
Yeah.
They're all dead.
Right. And so the queen said she valued his service at court and didn't want him risking his life. But there was kind of undertones of she didn't want him to gain too much power.
Okay.
So there was some like, I admire you and I want you by my side. There was also some, I don't want you to get too big for your britches.
Mm-hmm.
So she never allowed him to go and lead any of these expeditions in person. She sort of maintained control over him.
Which is weird because it's not like an elected position unless she's worried about him getting too much power over there and then getting ideas.
I guess. Yeah. Yeah. I think she was just, again, not a historian. Don't know anything about history, but she could have just been like a little paranoid or something.
Yeah.
You know, he's got to stay here by my side, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. Gotcha.
And so knowing that he's on a time crunch, he very quickly arranges an expedition to the New World and it departs England on April 27th, 1584. He has two ships, and the captains of the ships are Philip Amatus and Arthur Barlow. And
that's the name of the boat?
The name of the captains.
Oh, sorry. Can you say that one more time? Because clearly I heard what I wanted to.
Yeah, so the two ships were captained by Philip Amatus
okay.
and Arthur Barlow.
Yeah, see, now that actually makes sense. Okay, got it.
And at that point in time, because they were all sails, like they didn't have engines in the 1500s.
Right.
They would have to essentially go way too far south. And then come over and catch the jet stream back up north.
Okay.
They would go down to like around the Caribbean mm-hmm. and then catch the stream back north to where they were actually trying to get to.
Okay.
They sailed till July 4th when they sighted land that is now called Cape Fear. That's near Wilmington, North Carolina today. And then the fleet made landfall on July 13th at an inlet north of Hatteras Island.
Okay.
So Hatteras Island, you can look it up today.
Still around. Yeah.
I was on Hatteras Island this past summer. This is also sometimes known as Croatoan Island, which will become extremely important, or Hatterask Island, it can be called sometimes.
So called all these different things, is there controversy to what you call it, or it's just had such a history, these names have kind of all been what you would call it over time, so you can kind of interchangeably call it that. Does that make sense?
Yeah. It would just be based on what time period you're talking about.
Okay.
Like today, it's just Hatteras Island. I don't think that's like a controversial name. It just is Hatteras Island.
Yeah.
But in the times that we're talking about now, late 1500s, it was called Croatoan Island.
Okay, got it.
Our first note on the indigenous people of the time, the Native Americans, they, at this point, because Europeans were just relentless with trying to colonize, the Native Americans had very likely encountered or at least observed Europeans trying to come over and land and establish colonies or just explore on the land and get back on their boats or whatever. They had probably had some degree of interaction with the Europeans that were coming over.
Okay.
The major tribe is the Secotan, S-E-C-O-T-A-N. Mm-hmm. At this time, they controlled Roanoke Island and they controlled the mainland on the other side of the sound.
Okay.
So they controlled where some of these colonists are going to land, and they controlled the mainland too. And after this, wait, hold on. Okay. So,
sorry, cough break. Now I'm good.
So this initial journey with Philip Amatus and Arthur Barlow, this was like an expedition. This was not to establish a colony. This was more so like go over there, figure out where we should go, find a good place for everything to be set up, and then come back and we'll organize in earnest, like a group of people to go and stay.
Like scouts. That sounds awful.
Right.
Yeah. Go cruise by and then swing on back. Okay.
So they land, they explore the area for a while, and they meet the Secotan tribe of Native Americans.
Oh, so they get along okay?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay.
The Native Americans, the Secotan people, they're friendly enough, mm-hmm. helping where they can. They're not just immediately aggressive and trying to get the Europeans off of their land.
I'm guessing that's because Europeans hadn't tried to just take all their stuff at this point.
Bingo!
Yeah.
And so you know what? I think it's Secotan. Not Secotan, Secotan.
You can just give me a few Secotans if you want. We can
Secotan.
Correct it, or we can roll with it and you can.
Secotan. I said I was going to say it all wrong. I'm correcting myself.
Yeah.
We're doing this live.
We'll correct in real time. Yeah.
So the Secotan people, mm-hmm. their chieftain is named Wingina. W-I-N-G-I-N-A. Wingina. Mm-hmm. She had actually recently been injured in a war with the Pamlico tribe. So she actually wasn't able to go to the meeting with these Europeans. Her brother, Granjanimio, Granjanimio represented the Secotan people in that meeting.
Okay.
And so they meet with the captains. They're communicating as best they can. They're sharing ideas. They're showing them, you know, various parts of the island. It was a cordial meeting between the people.
So amicable, no bad blood yet, in theory. Not saying it's coming. I don't know yet, but
no bad blood at this point. So they landed July 13th. They had these interactions for a little while. Then they set sail back to England. And in autumn of 1584, they make it back to England and they give their report to Sir Walter Raleigh, and they speak of the tribe's hospitality. They speak of the strategic location of Roanoke Island, and they actually brought back two indigenous people who agreed to come back with them.
I was about to say, by choice?
Yeah, by choice.
Okay.
They brought along Juan Cheese, who was a Secotan, who was a Secotan.
Yep. There you go.
And they brought back Manio, who was a Croatoan.
Okay.
Manio is what Roanoke Island today is called.
Got it.
They bring them back. Again, they're cordial. They're friendly. And so Sir Walter Raleigh is getting a great report on this area that he wants to colonize.
Is the vibe of this meeting bringing them back just let's exchange culture or talk and get to know each other? Is there not any suspicion of why they're there or curious about them? Do they act like it's for trade? It seems like you can kind of, at least hearing you say it, I can almost feel the ulterior motive. So was there no suspicion of that at that time, or just it wasn't that yet? I don't know. Or can anybody say?
It feels to me, and again, this is, you know, what, over 400 years ago?
Yeah.
And so it feels like the Native Americans were just a trusting people.
Mm-hmm.
And the Europeans were taking advantage of that fact.
Yeah, that checks out.
That's the feel that I get, right?
Yeah.
Because essentially the expedition's report that makes it to the Queen is that they're describing this region as being pleasant, a bountiful land. They're talking about a new golden age. They're referencing the Garden of Eden.
Okay.
Basically explaining to the Queen that this is the greatest place that has ever existed, and we absolutely have to colonize this.
Yeah.
Now, if you remember, Sir Walter Raleigh has the rights to all of this, and he needs to establish a colony.
Right.
It's likely that a lot of this report going to the Queen was Sir Walter Raleigh embellishing everything so that the Queen would agree to put more resources towards his expeditions going to the Outer Banks.
Because he's got that 1591 timer, like.
Right. And so if I convince the Queen that this area is just like all sunshines, rainbows, and golden temples, then maybe she'll extend that deadline. Maybe she'll give me more ships, more people, more supplies, more everything.
Yeah.
So Sir Walter Raleigh is playing his hand as best he can.
Yeah. Gotcha.
After she gets this report of this basically just paradise, she decides in 1585 that she is going to knight Walter Raleigh. This is when he becomes Sir Walter Raleigh.
Okay.
And she proclaims all of the land that he has found Virginia.
Ayo. Hey. Just because we're from
it. So just everything at this point in the New World is just Virginia, right? The concept of states doesn't exist.
Yeah.
And she proclaims him Knight, Lord, and Governor of Virginia.
Does that check the box of colonizing or?
Not yet.
Okay.
But it does get him a long way, because now that he is Knight, Lord, and Governor of this new land, he can start looking for investors to start setting up a colony.
This is all business, right?
Yeah.
At the end of the day, this is a business.
Yeah. Sir Walter Raleigh was all about business.
Yeah.
And so he decides that for his first colony in Virginia, he's going to essentially just have a large military operation go over there.
Okay. I wonder why. Yeah.
And their main goals are going to be exploration and evaluation of natural resources. What can we take from over there, basically?
Okay.
He wants, the number in his head is that he would like 69 people to stay. And to do that, he sends around 600 men on the voyage. So he has impressed the Queen enough that she has agreed to send 7 ships and 600 men to go try to establish the very first colony in Virginia.
So sending 600 to 700 people and then that many stay, are they expecting that many casualties along the way, or that's just they stay, they're willing to be in the new land or whatever you want to call it, and then the rest just come back?
I think sort of all of the above, Like, we're sending 600. Some are going to die on the way there. Maybe a ship goes down.
But we hope about 70 are able to just...
Yeah, we hope at least 70 make it there to stay. And then we have enough people to sail all the ships back home also.
Okay.
Also, on the voyages back, Manio and Wanchese, they're heading back to their tribes, returning from England.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And again, Sir Walter Raleigh, he is not allowed to go. He has to stay with Queen Elizabeth. And so he puts Richard Grenville in charge of the mission. And then a man named Ralph Lane is appointed governor of the colonies. And Ralph Lane is kind of the one that's like, all right, once we get established, Sir Walter Raleigh, you're the governor of the town. Like I said, there's seven ships and they take off in the journey over there. A few of them stay together here and there, but more or less the seven ships get separated.
Okay.
Eventually, without Grenville, Grenville's ship was still separated. Three ships, the Roebuck, Red Lion, and Dorothy, they make it to the Outer Banks, arriving in mid-June.
Beach week. Nice.
And the Red Lion leaves about 30 men on Croatoan Island and then immediately departs for privateering in Newfoundland. So they like drop 30 people off and they're like, peace. Mm-hmm. We're going to go try and find some stuff up north.
Is privateering just getting goods to sell when you get back, or what is that?
Getting goods to sell, exploring new lands, doing stuff for personal gain.
Okay. So you've done your job. We're in this area. What else can we kind of do
before we head back?
Okay, got it.
So they leave 30 people, and then eventually the ship, the Tiger, which is the ship Grenville is on, the head of the mission, eventually the Tiger arrives at Croatoan Island, and it runs aground trying to land on the Outer Banks. Again, the sand is constantly shifting. The water depths are kind of iffy, and so they wouldn't have known this. And so the Tiger runs aground, and a lot of the food that they had for the journey is just lost because of it. With the loss of provisions from the Tiger, the colony wouldn't be able to support as many people as it had originally planned.
Okay.
But Grenville decides, I'm going to leave 100 men here at the colony. So you had 30, and then he leaves 70.
Okay.
So you end up with 100 people staying with Ralph Lane at the colony. Again, Ralph Lane was appointed governor just kind of because. Grenville decides, all right, 100 men, that's enough for the colony to do what it needs to do until another fleet can come and resupply you guys.
Okay.
Because they have to do this in advance. They sort of send the fleet out, and then months later, we'll send out a resupply mission before they even know if anybody's gotten there or not.
Yeah.
Because again, there's no mail, there's no internet. You don't know what's going on the other side of the ocean. You just have to sort of...
got to prepare for the worst, and worst case scenario, you're oversupplied.
Right. So he leaves 100 men. Their supplies are running short because all of the supplies in the one boat were ruined when it ran aground. But he says, you know, there's another resupply ship coming. Y'all should be okay for that time. But because he could not possibly know this, the resupply ship that was supposed to go to Grenville's people got redirected to Newfoundland to help with some stuff that was going on with Spanish ships messing with English ships. And so it never arrived. It never made it to Grenville's men in Roanoke.
Gotcha.
What ends up happening is the men that Grenville left behind end up becoming extremely dependent on the generosity of the Native Americans in the area.
Yeah. And they haven't burnt that bridge yet, presumably. So still chummy.
Right. But the Native Americans have, you know, 100 men that are like, we're starving. We need food. We don't know what to do. Like, we don't know how to hunt these lands. We don't know how to grow crops on these lands. And so the Native Americans are essentially having to keep these men alive.
Right.
So Grenville, while he's trying to get his ship repaired, he takes another group of men to explore the Pamlico Sound, and he finds a variety of different Native American tribes. He finds the Secotan. Let me start over. He finds the Secotan, the Askogunk, the Pamlico, and his parties sort of interact with, talk to, gather some information from these various tribes that are in the area.
Right. They were all just as willing to help.
They were willing to help. They don't want to see people die needlessly. During these expeditions that he's going on, meeting these different tribes, Grenville finds that a silver cup that belongs to the English has gone missing.
Mm-hmm.
So Grenville, realizing the silver cup was reported missing, he sends a detachment of his men back to the Askelgonk village to demand the return of the silver cup.
Not having any evidence that they were responsible.
Not having any evidence that they're responsible for it.
Okay.
The Native Americans essentially are like, we don't have a cup. We don't know what you're talking about. Like,
we don't care about the cup.
Yeah, like we wouldn't, even if we had it, we would like, we just give it back to you. It's not like something we really care about.
Yeah. We've kept you alive for a hot minute.
And
so
then once they don't produce the cup, he sends the detachment to the village. They come back to Grenville and they say, yeah, they don't have the cup, or they're not giving us the cup, but we don't have the cup. It's just lost.
Yeah.
Grenville, just being who he is, he decides that severe retribution is necessary to avoid the appearance of weakness.
Naturally, yeah.
And so he sends his men back to burn down the village, tear down its crops, and kill as many of the villagers as they can.
Mm-hmm.
Which, just why? Why are we doing this?
Yep. After,
you know, right? Like, they're keeping your men alive.
Yeah.
And Grenville, I think he was just very detached from just the everyday colonist.
Mm-hmm.
And he just was on a power trip.
He may have just misplaced his own cup even, probably, and was like, oh.
Right. So after this happens, Manio, the individual that had gone to England and came back,
right,
he gets involved and he's like, whoa, what are we doing here, guys? And so he sets up a meeting between Grenville and one of the Native American leaders, Granjanimio. I think I mentioned him earlier. He was the brother of Wingina, the chieftain of the Sakotan.
Yes, right.
So Manio arranges this meeting between the two of them, and the Native Americans decide that they are going to provide land to the English to just have their settlement on.
Oh,
this is your land. Just have your settlement. Leave us alone.
Just chill out.
Stay in your place. Stay in your lane, and everything's good, right?
Get another silver cup. It's all chill.
Exactly. So basically, the Native Americans are like, look, we don't want any trouble. Just have this area. That's yours. That's fine. And we'll stay on our side of the fence, basically.
Yeah.
After that is done, Grenville sets sail back to England on August 25th, 1585. And just a few days into the journey, because again, he has to go down to the Caribbean and then back up the Atlantic on the other side.
Right.
Sort of just like a massive U in the Atlantic Ocean where you have to travel.
That's just because of the jet stream?
Yeah, the jet stream and the currents and stuff. Right. So to get back to England, you have to go south around the Caribbean, out into the Atlantic, and then back up the eastern side of the Atlantic up to England.
Right.
So a few days into his return journey, he raids a large Spanish galleon in the Caribbean, and he ends up getting just, well, a boatload of treasure.
Wait, so he found...
The English and the Spanish were kind of just at all points poking at each other.
Right, so he stumbled across another boat or...
Yeah, like he came across a Spanish galleon.
And just like, let's pirate the hell out of this thing. And
yeah,
yeah, okay.
Exactly. And so what ends up happening is that he ends up back in England with so much treasure on his boat that it justifies the whole expedition.
Okay. Pays for it all.
Yeah. It makes the whole expedition profitable, which again has Queen Elizabeth really excited. She's like, well, hold on. You went out and you established this colony and you came back with this much. We need more stuff out there. We've got to send more people out there.
She sounds thirsty. She's got Sir Walter Wright just like, you ain't going anywhere.
You're not going
he goes
nowhere.
Back with all this gold and he's like,
Right?
I love this stuff.
Yeah. So again, it's not hard for Walter Raleigh to justify, give me more resources, give me more people, give me more stuff, right?
It's still crazy to me he is not allowed to go on his own.
Yeah, he's not allowed to leave her side.
Yeah. He's in a cage next to Queen Elizabeth, just like,
You're not far off. So while the folks in England, Grenville, Walter Raleigh, the Queen, they're all celebrating this new colony, the actual men that are left in the colony, they start to become really dispirited. Morale starts getting really low because when they were on the boats coming over, they were promised there's land, there's riches, there's resources, there's all this stuff. And once they land, they realize
there's nothing here.
Yeah. And we're relying on the indigenous people to just stay alive.
Yeah, we are only here because of who we happen to run into here.
Yeah. And so that autumn in 1585, they basically were only able to stay alive by borrowing corn from the Native Americans. That was their only source of food for quite a while. They were able to hunt some venison. They were able to do some fishing, but basically they were more or less reliant on the Native Americans to stay alive that autumn in 1585.
Which seems like a pretty big trend for colonialists.
Yeah.
Pre the bad stuff.
Pre the bad stuff.
Yeah. For lack of a better term. Yeah.
And then during this time, because their mission was exploration, basically.
Yeah.
They did do quite a bit of exploring and they made it as far north as the Chesapeake Bay and the James River.
Okay.
So shout out Richmond, James River.
Harvey.
And while in the Chesapeake Bay, they met villages of the Chesapeake and the Skioke. S-K-I-C-O-A-K. Skioke. Mm-hmm. The Sikotans had described the Skioke as they had like the largest village in the region.
Okay.
And so before getting there, the colonists were thinking like the massive cities of like the Inca or the Maya, those types of things.
Yeah.
And so once they made it to the Skioke village, they realized this is like a large group of people, but there aren't like monuments. There aren't tons of riches.
Yeah.
This is just like a very large community of people living together. And so that further disheartened them that like...
Oh, that it wasn't these huge stone pillars and stuff they're coming into. It wasn't this like...
Yeah. There aren't all these riches that they can steal. There's not a lot of resources. It's just a large group of people more or less...
Willing to help them out.
Willing to help them out and living off the land.
Oh my God. Ew. Yeah.
This was not enough for the English.
Yeah, of course.
So you already have one instance of the colonists destroying a Native American village. They also notice at this time that every time the colonists visit a new town, very shortly after, a very deadly epidemic runs through that village.
Yeah, right.
And we know now that's the flu, smallpox, it's the diseases.
Later weaponized, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, later weaponized.
Yeah.
But so we know now what was going on. But at the time, especially the Sikotan people, they believed that it was some sort of supernatural force being unleashed by the English.
Okay.
So a little bit more distrust coming about, a little more looking at them sideways, wondering what their real intentions are.
Right.
And then Wingina, the chieftain of the Sikotan, falls sick and eventually recovers after the English come to the village and pray over her.
Okay. She about to convert? As they say in the church. Hey, yo, she about to convert.
So what ends up happening actually is not good because she is like, oh, the English healed me.
Yeah.
We need to send them to other villages to do this prayer thing to heal other people.
Okay.
And they end up going to different villages, which ends up just furthering the pandemic.
Right.
And so it really just ends up making the disease spread even more.
Yeah. You can see where she's coming from for the time.
Yeah. Like totally she was trying to help out, but
yeah. Right.
And so pandemics are happening everywhere. This really drastically impacts the fall harvest.
Because no workers to plant crops, harvest crops, all that stuff.
Yeah. There's not as many people to harvest crops, plant crops, work the fields, basically.
Yeah.
And so the fall harvest is very limited. And this is at a point where the English colonists are extremely dependent on the Native Americans for the food. So if you have a very poor harvest, well, those new people that we're just donating all this food to, they're not going to get as much.
Right.
Like we got to, you know,
look after our own first. Yeah. 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 Yeah.
By the spring of the next year, the tensions are really kind of strained between the Native Americans and the colonists. And so at this point, when Gina changes their name to Pemisipan.
Okay.
Pemisipan means one who watches. So at this point,
she's getting sus, or
yeah, just the name change alone
was also the one to send out everyone.
Yeah, but now kind of maybe second guessing that.
Yeah, then seeing some ulterior motives developing.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so you see a lot of tense interactions with the Native Americans at this point. There's sort of just this powder keg brewing between the colonists and the Native Americans at this point.
Yeah.
So Lane, the governor, who had been out exploring and, you know, meeting these people and everything, he comes back to the colony a little bit after Easter, and he finds the colony, those 100 men that they had left behind, he finds them half starved and with no natural resources, like nothing to show of their expeditions.
Did he come back with supplies or just...
No.
Hey, are things still good?
Yeah. He basically just comes back to check on them and he realizes they're half starved.
Yeah.
They haven't found anything worthwhile.
Not the Garden of Eden as promised. Yeah.
And at this point, Pemisipan is preparing to just withdraw their whole village from the area. So the English would not be able to be relying on them at all. Pemisipan is like, y'all are on your own now. We're out.
They were going to relocate themselves, not remove the British area they gave them. They are fully moving as a tribe.
Yeah, as a tribe, because they had like a large area of land.
Yeah.
They're basically saying like, we're leaving Roanoke Island.
Okay.
We're going to go into our other lands. We're all going to live there. We're not going to be here to help you at all.
Yeah, so good luck. Sorry about it.
Yeah.
Well, not so much, but yeah.
And so with that... And there being no sign of that resupply ship coming because it had been rerouted to Newfoundland.
Yeah.
The colony is feeling pretty rough.
Yeah. Sounds like it.
Yeah. And so at this point, Wanchese, who is the other Native American that went back to England with them. So you had Manio and Wanchese.
Yeah.
Wanchese has sort of gotten past that just trusting nature and has decided now the English are a threat.
Go figure. Yeah.
Right. Like we, right. We need to see them for who they are, and they are a threat.
Yeah.
And so at this point, Pemisipan, the chief.
Formerly Wingina.
Formerly Wingina.
Yes.
So Pemisipan at this point, like I said, evacuates the Sakotan people from Roanoke. And while doing that, destroys their fishing piers. So the English will have a much harder time fishing.
Okay.
Orders all Sakotan people not to sell food to the English and to leave the English to their own devices.
They're starting to clue in here, I think, to why they're here.
Right. And so the English at this point have no way to produce enough food to sustain the colony. They just don't.
Yeah.
And so Lane, the person who was appointed governor, he orders his men to break up into small groups, basically forage, beg for food all over the Outer Banks. Essentially, just do whatever you can to survive at this point. And on June 1st, Lane and his top officers are able to get a meeting with one of the tribes.
Okay.
I'm going to try to say this word. I'm going to spell it so you know what I'm about to go through.
Okay.
And then I'm going to try and say it. Okay. So they visit with, the spelling is D-A-S-A. Are you writing this down?
Yeah.
D-A-S-A-M-O-N-G-U-E-P-O-N-K-E.
Right. All right. So what's your...
Dasa Mangu Ponke.
I'm going to give it a little flair on the end, a little accent.
Either one of those could be good. So Lane and his top officers are able to get a meeting with Dasa Mangu Ponke.
Yep.
And he takes 25 men to visit him. And they had previously taken a Sakotan person prisoner. They were like, okay, one way we can get what we want is if we take a prisoner and then we can negotiate their release. You give us a month worth of corn and we'll give you your person back. Under the pretense of discussing releasing that individual, they get a meeting with this Sakotan individual.
Okay.
Once they're admitted into the council so that they can begin the meeting. The second they're let in and the meeting basically starts, Lane gives the signal for his men to attack. It's the only thing they know how to do.
Yeah, clearly.
It just doesn't begin to make sense to me. Like, just be nice to these people so that they will help us.
Yeah.
Instead, no, we're just going to attack them even though we're already starving.
Yeah, like, hey, they kind of kept us alive for a bit. And they're like, mm-mm.
So Lane gives the signal for the men to attack. And in this whole situation, Pemissipan, the chief, is shot and flees into the woods. And Lane sends his men after Pemissipan. And after a little while, they come back with Pemissipan's head severed.
Oh my God.
And they leave it on a stake outside of the colony. So, again, the decision making here is just god awful.
Yeah. Thanks for the help, by the way.
Right. Like, thanks for keeping us alive. Here's your chief's head severed outside of our fort.
Yeah. Yeah. Does this help tensions? Circle yes or no.
Right. So, by June.
June of 86. So, still some time for Sir Walter Raleigh to get his colony in there in time.
Yeah. So by June of 1586, the colonists are able to make contact with a fleet of ships going by, captained by Sir Francis Drake.
Oh.
Another famous person. He's sort of just like a cameo in this story.
What's up, y'all? Just Draking over here.
He shows up. He is coming by the island. The colonists are able to get his attention. So he stops, and he had just been on a successful raiding mission. And so his boats are full of refugees, unfortunately slaves, and a lot of different goods and stuff to take back to England.
Yeah.
Lane convinces his men, look, we got to ride back. We're abandoning this colony. They know that they're supposed to stay there, that Sir Walter Raleigh is going to be mad. They know that their mission is to establish a foothold there.
Mm-hmm.
But Lane convinces them, like, look, we're too far gone. Tensions are too high with the indigenous folks. We got to get back to England. And so Sir Francis Drake agrees to take the colonists with him and go back to England. And again, Manio agrees to go with them back to England.
Okay.
As does a different Native American, Towaye, T-O-W-A-Y-E. He goes with them.
Why? Like, why would they want to go back?
I think Manio, he was the one individual that to the very end really tried to keep the peace between the English and the Native Americans.
Okay.
I don't know a whole lot about Towaye, but I know that Manio, like, really
trying to make it work.
Trying to make it work. Yeah.
Props.
Yeah. Lane leaves three colonists behind. I don't know why he would leave just three, but they're never heard from again. And because of having to take these colonists on, Sir Francis Drake essentially has to kick off some of the slaves and refugees.
Mm-hmm.
And so he sort of just leaves them, and they're never heard from again either. So a few people are basically essentially just abandoned.
Yeah.
And the rest of them go back to England. So they end up reaching England, July of 1586. And upon arrival, the colonists do bring back samples of tobacco, maize, and potatoes to England.
Mm-hmm.
So they are able to introduce those things to England.
Those are big.
Three major crops. Now, after they had left on Sir Francis Drake's ship, shortly after that, actually, a supply ship sent by Raleigh arrives at Roanoke.
Okay.
And they find everybody's gone because they had just left. There's no sign of the three people left behind. There's no sign of the slaves and refugees. Everybody's just gone.
Mm-hmm.
And then 2 weeks after that, Grenville comes back with another relief fleet and a year's worth of supplies and reinforcements of 400 men.
But nobody's there.
But nobody's there. So essentially, Ralph Lane convinces them to leave for Sir Francis Drake's fleet. They leave. And then like 3 days later, a supply ship comes. And it's like, oh, there's nobody here. So the supply ship leaves. And then 2 weeks after that, Grenville comes back with 400 men, a year's worth of supplies, and sees, oh, everybody's gone.
Yeah.
And so he decides, okay, I'm going to leave 15 men here.
Can you imagine? I'd really rather go back.
He leaves 15 men there so that the English can maintain a presence in the New World.
But 15 people?
Right. So essentially, it's like, we have to have somebody here so that we have a legal standing for this land.
Yeah.
And so he decides to leave 15 men there. By all accounts, very, very quickly after Grenville leaves, they are attacked, killed, and never seen again.
What, fish in a barrel kind of?
Right. So the indigenous, yeah. So the indigenous people probably saw the three colonists and then the slaves and refugees. They may have unfortunately perceived them all to be a threat and probably killed them. And then Grenville, who was the initial aggressor in this whole thing, ordering a village destroyed because of a silver cup.
Yeah, right.
They see him come, leave 15 men behind. And like the second those sails go over the horizon, they attack them. And then that's that for those 15 guys. So everybody gets back to England. Lane has deserted the colony. Raleigh is updated on all of the goings on. Mm-hmm. Raleigh is still convinced, I still have time. It's 1587 at this point. I still have time. I got 4 years.
Yep.
I'm going to make another attempt. Despite Lane having deserted the colony, Raleigh decides, I'm going to make another attempt. I still have 4 more years to establish a colony in the New World and still maintain power there. And on January 7th, 1587, Raleigh approves another corporate charter to found the city of Raleigh with John White as governor. And on May 8th, 1587, 3 ships depart England. The 115 men, women, and children aboard would become known as the Roanoke Colony.
I am David Stooldreyer, creator and host. The show is edited by my co-host, Evan Miller. All original music created by Sean Bullock. You can follow him at Sean Bullock Video on Instagram. All original artwork done by Tannis. Follow her at Tannis Tattoos on Instagram as well. Thank you for listening.